Good morning, Tony. It's really nice to talk to you again.
It was good to hear from you as well. I'm trying to think where we start this morning, actually, because it's one of those interesting times. It's the middle of the summer, and we no signs of rain, although we've had plenty of rain. It's knowing how much soil is how much moisture is in the soil, isn't it?
It is. I was at my allotment last week. And after, I mean, really, really hot. I've been going up there just in the evening, in all honesty, because I decided that, you know, and I've talked about this before, haven't I, about I don't like watering too much.
No.
I think that the roots of the plants need to search for water rather than having given to them on tap, so to speak. But when I went up there and I had a couple of things to plant, 2 inches below the surface of the soil, it was damp. And one of the reasons for that, of course, is because I put in a huge amount of organic material into my soil in the winter and through the spring, and I mulch very heavily. So I've had an enormous crop of strawberries this year.
Oh, wow.
And believe it or not, haven't watered them at all.
Really?
I really, really haven't.
Well, environmentally, that's good at the moment because water in many places not in sort of enormously ready supply, is it?
No, it's not. I mean, I'm not in a hosepipe ban area, fortunately, but a lot of people are. So, please, the only thing you can do is to keep putting on that compost, and I don't mean bagged, you know, multi-purpose peat-free stuff. I do mean a proper stable manure or anything like that.
You do all this stuff in the winter, and it seems like a while ago that we actually talked about this sort of thing, but what do you actually put into your compost to make it that rich that it'll hold the moisture?
I do a lot of everything that I take out of the kitchen. Other than all the green stuff, like vegetables, etc. I also, believe it or not, save the potato water. And I water my garden with the potato water because there are, elements in that which will feed the plants anyway.
Yeah.
But that's a by the by. Anything green. And also, if you're making a compost heap, get some air in there. And even if you've got one of those Dalek composters, stick the spade in there or the fork and actually have a squidge around so that you get some air in there. And if we ever get any rain, then leave the lid off the composter to get the water in there. So that's really the tip for the day. The other thing is, quite honestly, we all... How many people have got gardens where the soil is so hard that it cracks open?
Oh, yeah, that's the problem, I mean, for most of us. And what you've described there in putting into the compost is really forward planning, because you're not only being environmentally friendly, you're, reusing the waste from your food as well.
That's
you're
right.
also
yeah.
It also helps save water in the summer and, of course, produces more food. So it's a win-win situation, that, isn't it?
It is, definitely. But, I mean, I garden on heavy clay, and the first thing that will happen is that the soil will crack open once we get this sort of thing. So the thing is to get out your trusty hoe. H-O-E.
H-O-E, the hoe.
Now,
I remember
that's
these
right.
things.
It's a Father Christmas ho, ho, ho.
One of those lesser-used garden implements, I think, isn't it?
Well, I use my... I don't like a Dutch hoe. Now, the Dutch hoe is the flat blade with, like, a D in the middle of it.
Yeah.
Yeah? There is a really good one, and it's called a Swoe. S-W-O-E. Right? And it's angled... so that you can get in between the plants as well. Now, I'm a great believer in tickling over your soil. And when I mean tickle over, I mean disturb the top. What happens then is that when it does rain, the rain goes straight the way down into where it's needed rather than bounce off that hard surface and go down the cracks.
Yeah. seems that a good thing is to say it's one of those things we always had as a kid. You know, when I was a child, we had one, and you sort of, did round the edges of your lawn to get those nice and straight. And there were other things you could do with it, but it's one of those tools that I'm guessing has not been that much in favour recently, has it?
Do you know why? Because nobody is taught how to use them properly.
Well, that's the way with lots and lots of things, isn't it, really? Nobody's taught the old ways, and some of these old skills and things are actually disappearing from,
how to do them. That's absolutely right. I mean, I've got a whole thing. When I do a talk, I usually take a spade along with me and ask the audience, how many people have got bad backs? And hands go up all over the place. So you choose one sort of unsuspecting person and say, come out and have a look at this. Now tell me, here's a spade, how do you use it? And 9 times out of 10, they don't use it properly, which is quite interesting because and it's difficult to explain on radio, it really is. But you know, when you've got your hand on the handle, right? If you're right-handed, I'm right-handed. So I've got my right hand on the handle of the spade or the fork, and my other hand is on the shaft that goes down.
Yeah.
Right. Now then, the majority of people will hold it with their hand cupped up in the air. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't. I put it over the top.
Yeah.
And when you put it over the top, or when you lift the soil up in the air, the action for your body comes from your shoulder. If you do it the other way around and you're holding it like a stick, then the action is from your back.
That makes an awful lot of sense, actually, the way you described it, because I'm thinking, you know, shovels and spades clearing snow, and you've got your hand underneath and you scoop the stuff up and you sling it away. But of course, it makes perfect sense what you said there, to do it from the top rather than the underside, because you're lifting from the top rather than pushing up from the bottom, which of course is a, as you've described there, is a very different movement.
Well, I use a broom in exactly the same way, and a hoe and everything, but I was taught that by a 90-year-old allotment gardener. And he was still gardening at 95, absolutely upright.
That's wonderful. Why shouldn't he?
Exactly. He said, if you hold the spade like that, Gene, he said, you'll have a bad back by the time you're 30. And I've never held it that way again.
So we've got three handy tips this morning about, one, about what to put in your compost, two, using a hoe, and three, how to use a spade or a shovel properly. It's fantastic stuff, and you're a mine of information is all I can say with that one. Right, to get back to the things that actually grow in the garden, legumes are one of those things, beans, peas, etc.
Absolutely. Now, beans and peas enrich the soil. Now, how do they enrich the soil? Because if they are enriching the soil, there is less need for chemical fertilisers.
Is this the roots of the plants? Because this the plants is the roots clearly of the don't plant. Grow so, underground, do they?
Yeah. So what happens with the legume is that they have nitrogen-fixing bacteria on their roots.
All right.
And so when you've got, say, runner beans, for instance, and you cut down the top bit, which is all gone, and you've harvested your beans, and you've had a good Sunday lunch, etc., then cut it off at soil level and either leave it in the ground to rot away until next year, or dig it up and put it in your compost.
All right, because we were wondering what to do, because we're currently harvesting peas. And got 3 pounds of peas off of phenomenal. It was an afternoon spent shucking peas, it was, and then blanching them to freeze them so that we can actually keep them and use them. Very sweet and delicious and all the rest of it. But what do you do with the dead plants? And you've just the old plants. You've just answered the question.
Yeah, I mean you can compost the top, obviously.
Yeah.
But as I say, either dig up the roots and put them in a compost bin, or leave them in the ground over the winter and then mulch on the top. Because A lot of people these days, Tony, are actually using no-dig methods. So
that's the environmental thing, isn't it?
That is, rather than digging. I must admit, as an old-fashioned gardener, I do love to dig. And I love to see a properly dug plot. But there we are. The older you get, the less inclination you have to dig.
Well, I think there's a distinction there between the experience of somebody who's been at the garden for a very long time and the clash with the quest to save the environment, so to speak, we all know that there is climate change. We all know all about that, that there is that there. I'm just wondering what can be done in this country to actually prevent it without action across the world being done. So I would question the point about not digging. I would seriously question that as to what benefit it would seriously have.
Well, I think the same thing. I think what we've got to do, and we've talked about this just now, actually, I think we have to relearn old skills.
Mm.
I really, really do.
Unfortunately, that does involve a bit of digging.
Well, even so, even raised beds, you see. I mean, you can just dump everything in a raised bed and grow stuff.
Well, we've done that. I mean, we've got raised beds. They're made of railway sleepers, and they're about 2'6", 3 foot high.
Yeah.
And you've got a decent topsoil, but what's underneath is a mixture of all sorts of bits that mulch down. So every year you have to put some more on, because it actually, when it mulches down, of course, you get less volume.
Yeah, that's right. But I mean, that's a good thing. That's a no-dig method, really, isn't it? I mean,
because you have to rake the soil over. Otherwise,
but
it's just going to go
digging,
really hard.
But you're not digging down into base stuff. I mean, I wouldn't do double digging anymore. I just do single digging. Mm. But you're turning over the soil. You see, turning over the soil as well exposes all the nasty beasties that are underneath there, so the birds can get there. So environmentally, you're still being quite friendly because you're feeding the birds.
Well, of course, yeah, there is that as well. when talking about peas, when you said about sort of digging up the roots and sort of burying them in there, will they actually grow again? Or is it a case you have to start again?
You have to start again, really, because you couldn't, although some of them are perennial and will come back, but the majority, of course, die in the winter with the winter frosts and snow.
Okay. So what else can we find in the July garden? Because it's one of those times where you've done a lot of the work and you're sitting back like we are and thinking, oh, yeah, those beans are doing okay, but we've got to wait for them. Those tomatoes, yeah, they're still coming on. The strawberries, well, sort of okay, that sort of thing. What else can we be doing in the garden, or what else should be growing in the garden at this time?
Well, weeding, obviously, because the more you weed, the less water needs, because the weeds will take as much water as the plant. Mm. So if you can possibly do that, that would be absolutely fine. The other thing is, I mean, I'm picking later on today. I'm going to actually pick my first tomatoes.
Ooh.
So I'm quite pleased. It's a variety called Apero, which is like a little, it's not a cherry, but it's a small plum.
Ooh, lovely.
And it's very nice. And the other thing that I grew, legumes again, in front of the grow bags in the greenhouse, I put in climbing French beans.
Ooh.
And I'm picking them like there is no tomorrow.
Ours are still growing, but they're doing okay. There's lots
good
to come.
Yeah, so. Well, mine have had a little bit of a boost, haven't they, being inside. So.
Yeah. They're the things that kind of need a little bit of watering, because you were talking about earlier on about watering and letting the roots find the water when they're in not so much a grow bag, but in something like a grow bag, and it's kind of a trough, really, not too deep trough, but there's lots of plants, bean plants in there. The water is going to be not plentiful, so it does require regular watering at the base.
It is, but even, you know I've got a dog as well, but instead of just throwing the water away from the dog bowl when I replenish it, I put it on the garden. and anything like that, washing up water if you've got any. I mean, I haven't gone as far as getting a pump to get the bath water out because I don't have a bath very often. I use the shower. But again, using the shower saves water. All in all, I think we just need to be a little bit more careful and to learn how to be more economical with what we've got.
A lot of it is to do with the old school methods, isn't it, really?
That I think
Actually did actually help the environment more so than a lot of the things that have come in the preceding years. So
do we really need strawberries at Christmas time?
They don't actually taste much like strawberries. I've got to say, I was up in Norfolk a couple of weeks ago and visited a farm shop up at Wayford near Stalham in Norfolk.
Yeah.
And I tell you what, I got the best strawberries ever from there. One of those places, they grow all the stuff there.
Yes, exactly.
Phenomenal. Came back and we had to get some strawberries from somewhere else. Got them from a supermarket. I'm not going to say which one.
No.
And by comparison, they were absolutely tasteless.
I know, so it's amazing.
These are the industrially grown strawberries as opposed to the naturally grown strawberries that we got from a farm shop.
Well, when I come to see you in July
and
we do a little gardener's question time together,
mm-hmm.
I will bring you a pot of my strawberry jam.
Oh! I've got to be careful with that, but I love a bit of strawberry jam. Speaking of things July... you mentioned I'm going to do this very briefly, actually. You mentioned cucumbers. I'm not quite sure why you did, but I'm guessing it's something to do with the amount of juice on them.
No. I grow a dwarf cucumber.
All right.
They're mini mulch is one of them. And they're little tiny ones, like picnic cucumbers.
Yeah.
So they're about a third of the size. If you actually grow those, it's far better because you get them quicker anyway. I grow lunchbox size. That's what they're called.
There's less waste then, isn't it?
So you can get lunchbox size, you can get medium size, or you can get the standards. funnily enough, last year I grew miniature white. And it looked very strange. Because
Cucumbers.
Now, see, cucumbers to me are green.
Yeah.
But this was white. It tasted exactly the same as an ordinary cucumber. But my goodness, did they have a load of fruit on them? Absolutely masses of them.
Yeah.
I've actually grown mini munch this time. Now, that's an all-female variety. So you don't have to worry about the males getting fruity with the females, because if that happens, the cucumber will curl if they're pollinated. So I grow an F1 hybrid called Mini Mulch, and I don't get any problems.
Well, there you go. See, on the note of white cucumbers, we have to end because our time has run out. I was going to tell you about a strawberry that tastes like a pineapple, but we'll do that one another day.
Okay.
Jean Griffin, it's been good to catch up. I will see you, funny enough, at the Lye Garden Show next month in July. We are doing that chat.
We're doing it together.
We'll catch up a little more then. But for now, Jean Griffin, thanks for talking to us.
Thanks, and come along and see us.